Hi, I'm Elodie Reed, digital producer for Vermont Public Radio. This podcast has been edited for brevity and clarity. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Tomorrow, bars and social clubs in Vermont will be able to reopen with certain limitations. On Thursday, Vermonters age 60 and up can begin making appointments to get their COVID vaccine. 4 days later, those age 50 and above will become eligible. Governor Phil Scott has laid out a timeline for all remaining age bands down to 16, the youngest people allowed to currently get a vaccine. He says everyone should be eligible by April 19th, though it will be summertime before everyone who wants a shot or two is fully vaccinated. Today on our weekly health update, we'll answer your questions about the vaccine timeline, plus more variants cropping up in state testing, and we'll answer other things you are looking for answers about. I'm joined by Deputy Health Commissioner Tracy Dolan. Deputy Commissioner, thank you for giving us your time again.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
So the state anticipates that it will have eligibility open for all Vermonters by April 19th, and that's a significant number of people. I can't remember now whether it was Human Services Secretary Mike Smith or the governor who said during the press briefing that another contingent of the Vermont National Guard will be called up to assist in vaccination clinics because there will be so many more people coming on, particularly in that 16 to 29 age range, which it has been said before is the biggest single number for an age band. What is the vaccination clinic landscape going to look like by late April?
Well, we're scaling up as we go, as more and more people come into our vaccine program. And the National Guard are just outstanding. I haven't worked a lot with the National Guard before, and I would say everyone at the health department have become huge fans of the National Guard. They're just so professional. They operate like a well-oiled machine, and they're so flexible, you know, depending on our needs and the population and the roles they play. So they are going to increase their capacity with us. We're going to have more of them. We're going to look at increasing the number of clinics we have with the existing partners and possibly bringing more partners on as well. So we will have vaccination capacity as the vaccine comes in, and we'll ramp that up as we go.
Do you know how many Guard members are being called up to assist in this effort? How many are currently working on it and how many will be added?
I don't have that number, but I can get it back to you probably later today, but I don't have that number in front of me.
You know, there have been questions about how to make sure that vaccine clinics are accessible, and perhaps earlier in the vaccine rollout, that's been a little bit easier to do because it was either smaller age bands or more concentrated groups of people. For example, you know, group 1A, you could go to long-term care facilities and schedule vaccinations there where residents are. For people who work in frontline healthcare jobs, the hospital seemed like a natural place for a lot of those clinics to occur. Now, when we're adding more people and more disparate communities and people who have lots of different kinds of lives and different attitudes towards the vaccine potentially, there was some conversation coming up in today's press briefing about how to get everybody vaccinated, not just saying you're eligible, but actually both encouraging people and letting them know all of the information. So, for example, in Essex County, Vermont, where it's currently the lowest uptake of the vaccine among eligible Vermonters, the state has said it's doing some new outreach by adding digital signs and trying to reach out to Colebrook, New Hampshire, where a lot of Vermonters get their medical care, to see if there can be some more information conveyed across state borders. There's also been talk about could there be vaccination clinics on college campuses when young Vermonters are eligible. The South Burlington principal tweeted during the press briefing, "We're ready to have one here at the high school for high school students who are 16 and up." And another high school said, "We're already doing a clinic for older Vermonters here, so we're ready too." So what is the state's plan for how to make those vaccine clinics accessible in a way that encourages uptake in younger groups?
Yeah, you know, you're right. When we have a somewhat captive audience who's highly motivated, that's really the best combination for uptake of any medical therapy, including vaccination. And so you saw really high uptake in the older population, in part because they were highly affected and in part because we were able to talk to them as an audience that were often in one place together. There was a lot of peer support. There was a lot of staff support, with staff also encouraging them. The farther away we get from that, so people living in different towns and different age groups, maybe with differing levels of health conditions, to the extent that they might feel healthy and not feel like it's important, that's when we have to start getting even more creative. And so we have a toolkit that'll be coming out internally that we're reviewing, that has all kinds of strategies working on peer-to-peer support, really working on bringing the vaccine closer to people, really thinking about location, and then all kinds of media. We know that we have some concerns about younger people and the uptake there. We know there are differences depending on political affiliation. So we have to be thoughtful about who are the influencers and who do we need to get to in order to get the message out. Sometimes a message has to go out over and over. It's not enough to go through one pathway. We know, for example, when you quit smoking, the message that you receive is often multiple times in multiple ways, and people often try to quit multiple times before they're successful. In that same way, this is a behavior change. If you haven't been someone who would normally get a vaccine and you have some hesitancy or you have low motivation, we'll have to come at you with a lot of different messages, either you or your loved ones or other people who influence you.
And what is the health department's TikTok handle?
What's our TikTok handle? That's a great question. I think we're going to make one today, Jane, and then we'll tell you.
Yeah, it is interesting to think about using influencers. I mean, that term influencers is such a sort of a post-millennial term as well. But, you know, this idea that you're inviting people who have influence in their communities to target that community. You've already talked about, as the health department, doing this with Vermonters of Color to try to rebuild trust with government-run health care and public health policy, which has certainly not always prioritized, but also done significant damage to communities of color over the history of this country. But now it's also a strategy that you think will be needed among younger Vermonters and maybe Vermonters in counties where there's less of an uptake as well.
Absolutely. And Vermonters, you know, we saw a study that just came out a couple of days ago that showed political affiliation. If you're Democrat and you were asked if you were going to get the vaccine, the number was high. I think about 80% of Democrats said yes. If you were Republican, that number was much lower, 40 to 50%. So even by political affiliation, okay, so who has most influence through that channel? That might be an example, you know. It might be around location. It might be around hobbies. A lot of different ways to do this. We do have a lot of experience in public health getting at populations who might not get the messages through our most traditional means. And so I think we can apply that thinking now on a much bigger scale. And it's an exciting challenge, and it's one that I am hopeful will be successful, and I hope we continue to see good uptake in Vermont.
Listeners, again, if you have a question for the Health Department, Deputy Health Commissioner Tracy Dolan is here with us, and you can ask a question by writing to Vermont Edition at vpr.org or by calling 1-800-639-2211. Clay is on the line with us from Essex. Go right ahead, Clay.
Hey, how's it going?
Well, thanks.
Good, how are you? My question is, back when we were doing the senior citizens, I signed my mom up, and I had to use my email address because she didn't have one. And I went, I'm able to get mine on Monday to sign up for it. And I went in to register, and my email account is now attached to her. I can see where I can add a person, but is that going to work, or do I have to do something different to register?
Yeah, we've encountered this before, Deputy Commissioner, and this might be a great time to remind people, many of whom may be in that sandwich generation and have created accounts for somebody else or used their email. What should Vermonters who are going to become eligible, like Clay, do if their email address is associated with somebody else's vaccination?
Yes, thank you for raising that. You can go in and put yourself in as a dependent and get an appointment that way. But I think if you have more questions, the call center can help you, and they can help you get an appointment if you describe this problem. And I'm going to give you the number, 855-722-7878, 855-722-7878. We recognized early on that with folks doing that, if they didn't have more than one email address, if you have more than one email address, of course, use the other email address. That's another way to go, to create an email address on a different platform. But if not, call the call center and they can help you, and they might be able to walk you through how to add yourself as a dependent as well.
Okay, so you can add yourself as a dependent, which, you know, is only slightly psychologically awkward for adult children who haven't been dependents of their parents for a very long time. But that is a possibility, or use a second email address. But at any rate, you can get help through the hotline.
Yes.
And let's go to Martha in Burlington. Hi, Martha. You're on the air.
Hello. Good afternoon. Jane, we'll miss you terribly, but that's another matter.
Oh, thank you.
There's nobody like you. I'm a senior citizen. I have a renter who's a wonderful UVM student. I'd love him to get vaccinated as ASAP. How about it? What are you guys doing about that? Thanks.
Thanks, Martha. Deputy Commissioner Dolan. There's sort of two questions there. One is about the timeline for people who are college age. And then there's a deeper question, too, about what if you know, are you eligible if you go to college in Vermont but don't otherwise reside in Vermont? You know, how do you figure that out?
Yeah, we are not vaccinating people whose homes are not in Vermont. And so the out-of-state college students are still a little bit of a challenge right now. We are working through that, continuing to work on that. But as of April 19th, if you're a Vermonter going to school here, you will be eligible and you can sign up then. I know that timing will be tricky for people. And we anticipate that some people might end up leaving without getting vaccinated because of graduation time. So we're still talking to colleges and trying to figure out the best way to move forward on that, recognizing that time is not on our side in terms of graduation. But we do encourage anyone who goes to college who's a Vermonter to sign up as of April 19th.
So just to clarify, you said at one point if you go to school in Vermont, but do you mean if you are a resident of Vermont only?
Yes, if you're a resident of Vermont going to college in Vermont.
How are you determining that? Because some college students vote in the state that they go to college in, but, you know, yeah, like how are you figuring out residency?
Once April 19th comes up, I think we will have more information about that. But I believe right now it's really about home address. So when people register and they provide a home address in Vermont, that's how we determine if you're a Vermonter, basically, in the system. And so if people are providing an address here in Vermont and they're a Vermonter, they can move through it that way.
And would there be a prioritization to use something like the one-shot Johnson & Johnson vaccine on college students who may be moving between, you know, home at school and home at home?
Yeah, you know, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine has become a very hot commodity, as you're aware. One of the, of course, biggest benefits is the fact that it's one shot and you can then be fully vaccinated 2 weeks after your first shot because it's your only shot. And there has been talk about what populations are highest priority for that. We are trying to take into account populations that are more marginalized, populations that might have other risks, living in congregate settings. So we are thinking through now the highest priority for the Johnson & Johnson, given that we hope we will have more access to it and more availability to it in the coming weeks. But college students have certainly been in that conversation, but still uncertain about how we're going to move forward there.
We have some questions that have come in about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, specifically for people who cannot get the other vaccines. Issa wrote in to say, my mother lives in Vermont, is over 70, eligible to get the vaccine. She has an allergy to polyethylene glycol, which is an ingredient in the mRNA vaccines from Pfizer and Moderna. The CDC recommends against her getting one of the mRNA vaccines, but she can get the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which does not contain this ingredient. We've been unable to find a way to book her an appointment for J&J in Vermont. We have tried calling the state vaccine call center and all of the partner pharmacies. No one seems to be able to book an appointment for Johnson & Johnson. Is there a way for eligible Vermonters who must get this vaccine due to an allergy to book an appointment for it?
Right now, it is difficult to book an appointment for Johnson & Johnson. We don't have enough of it to allow for that kind of choice. However, we anticipate in the next few weeks, we will have a more obvious choice when you sign up. And we are hopeful that we will be able to open this up a little more, particularly for those people who do have a primary care recommendation. But at this time, unfortunately, we would have to hold off. And I know that's unfortunate for the handful of people who have allergies to those specific vaccines. For the most part, it is rare. All three vaccines are safe. It is only if you have an allergy to one of the components or if you've had a severe allergy to a vaccine in the past that we would recommend anything different. For the most part, all three are very safe. But if your primary care provider knows your history and has recommended otherwise, you're just going to have to hold tight a few more weeks, and hopefully we will have more access then.
Why didn't the state hold back Johnson & Johnson vaccine doses, given that we have known from the beginning that certain people would not be able to take those other two vaccines, but might be able to take the Johnson & Johnson one?
There's just a lot of competing priorities, and we also wanted to move quickly to get kids back in school, and we knew that one part of that would involve vaccinating teachers as well, so and the ability to be able to do that in a timely manner. And so just a lot of competing priorities. We recognize that is important. We also recognize that this woman's mother who's waiting a vaccine is important. So it's difficult. We're making hard decisions, and we know when we make one decision, sometimes somebody else is left out, in this case for a few weeks, and it's unfortunate. I wish it could be different right now, but in a few weeks, we're hoping that there will be more choice.
Well, it's more than a few weeks, right? I mean, some people have been eligible to get the vaccine for a month or more now, but couldn't get it because of a medical vulnerability. And so the state's stated priority of getting everybody who is the most vulnerable vaccinated, it sounds like the state has instead said we're prioritizing the vaccination of teachers and school staff over the small number of people who are unable medically to get those other two vaccines.
I would not frame it that we're prioritizing this person over this person at this point. There are a lot
of you specifically said there are priorities. We've had to prioritize. The state has made certain priorities, and you're just going to have to wait.
I did say that. the challenge here is when we choose one, it's less about saying somebody else isn't important.
Yeah.
We are in a tough situation here. So it's a few weeks from now, I believe. But obviously, if you were told earlier in the vaccination process that you had a specific allergy to one of those components, obviously that would have been a hold off from earlier on as well.
While we're talking about that, let's go to Allison in East Haven. Hi, Allison.
Hi, how are you?
Well, thanks. Go right ahead.
My question is, I signed my daughter up, who is 16 and above, through the health website. We got an appointment for last Thursday. We took the day off because it was in Orleans. I live in the Northeast Kingdom. And when my husband got there, they were not able to give her the vaccine because it was the Moderna and not the Pfizer. So tried calling the health department several times, found out that there is no Pfizer to be in either Orleans or Caledonia County. And we ended up by the chance having to drive all the way over to Barrie. And we have the capability to do that, but other people may not. And I think that kind of faults not equity for those who need the Pfizer.
Right. And so your daughter is under the age of 18, but is eligible because of a high risk medical condition, but only eligible to get the Pfizer vaccine that has been advised to be used in those 16 and up. Is that right, Allison?
That is correct.
So what about a situation like that, Deputy Health Commissioner, where, you know, again, it's somebody who can't get one of the other vaccines, can only get this one, and then they even went to the clinic and were turned away because there was no Pfizer there? Like, how can people who need to get one kind or another at least get the right information?
Yeah, normally they would. So that sounds like there was a glitch in our system, but our call center and our allocation and clinic people are aware that if you're between 16 and 18, you do need to be sent to a Pfizer clinic. So my apologies there. It sounds like we had a glitch on our end, but we are aware of that. And we have been shunting the people in that age group to the clinics that have Pfizer. One of the challenges, of course, is that the storage is different. And so not all clinics are capable of holding Pfizer versus Moderna. And we try not to mix the vaccines because we ask people to go back to that same clinic later at a specific time. And so we have been having to move people to clinics in that age range with just Pfizer, which sometimes means a little more of a drive time. In this case, though, you should have known in advance. So I do apologize. And I'm glad you were able to eventually get a Pfizer.
Jessica and Paul have a question. They write in, last spring, COVID drove us to postpone our wedding from mid-June 2020 to the middle of this coming June. Our hall is normally rated for 100 people, and we have 90-plus guests, so we would need the state to allow full occupancy. Almost half of the guests will be from out of state, and quarantining is impractical for too many. Fortunately, all but 10 guests are over 30 and will be fully vaccinated by June. The average age of those young guests is about 15. This is sounding like a math problem, I have to say, Jessica and Paul. But so they go on to write, what are the odds of the state allowing 100% occupancy in banquet halls by mid-June? I respect that a definitive answer may not be possible today, but any projection you can make would be very helpful, even if it's limited to, you know, probably better than 50-50 or worse than 50-50 that you'll be able to do this. So how can you advise Jessica and Paul?
Well, I know that we open up vaccination to everyone April 19th. Please go get vaccinated. We don't anticipate we'll have everyone vaccinated right away. The occupancy rate assumes a less vaccinated population. However, for people who are vaccinated, when they arrive, it's likely they won't need to, you know, we will probably see some changes in quarantine eventually on travel and vaccination. You may have people who are arriving who may not need to quarantine, but the occupancy rates will probably, occupancy rates will likely shift when a lot more opens up. And so I don't know that we'll be there in mid-June. I know that the governor is starting to open more and more and more, but it's just hard to predict by June what kind of occupancy rates we will have. So I'm sorry, I don't have a lot for you right now. I would say you're generally trending in a more positive direction with more vaccination, but hard to say right now.
Right. So for people who are thinking about things happening in June, you know, we've heard the governor say many times we should be back to normal. And he has repeatedly said he means really normal by the 4th of July. But in terms of those June dates, you know, should people who need to, like, you know, either try to get back their deposit or confirm something, that really there's just not enough information to make a decision at this point about things happening in June?
That's right. I wouldn't want to get ahead of the governor there. The other thing is, we're not positive of where we're going right now with some of the variants. Our case rates have been going down generally, but they're plateauing right now. So all of these things come into play. You know, I know that July is looking like a great date. Could we get there sooner? Some of that will depend on our case rates and on how well we protect ourselves and how many people get vaccinated between now and then.
That's right. As a DFR Commissioner Mike Pichek said in today's press briefing, there was an 8,000 case increase in our region from last week to this week, that, you know, cases are significantly up in many cases, although not in Quebec, he mentioned. But in Vermont, our cases are not up as significantly as in some other parts of the Northeast, but our cases were up a little bit over last week. So not trending in the right direction at the moment. Is there any hesitation on the part of the health department to knowing that bars and social clubs will be opening up tomorrow?
So you're asking, do we have hesitation about that policy?
Yeah.
We have a healthy amount of, we support the policy, of course, and we have a healthy amount of caution that we want to encourage people to keep doing the right things. So again, really, if you have any symptoms at all, please go get tested. Please get vaccinated as soon as possible. And wear masks when you're around others. It's really important. And so as things open up, you know, we will keep obviously tracking the cases, and I know we'll keep feeding that information to the governor. So it is a healthy amount of caution going along with these new openings. I mean, we're on both sides of it. You know, we're very excited because as people get vaccinated, they really do need to feel like things are changing. That's part of the motivation to get vaccinated. And then on the other side of it, yes, but we're not all vaccinated yet. You know, I talked last week about we're in this gray area of, you know, the hope, but also the caution. And so because we're public health and we're a little bit, you know, we're a little more into the weeds, you know, we sit a little more on the cautious side, but of course support the reopening of Vermont.
Well, Brian gets into this a little bit more. Brian writes, it seems that Governor Scott is willing to tolerate a plateau of more than 100 cases per day because it's mostly involving younger people. We've already protected or are close to protecting the most vulnerable, but it seems we're, quote, turning the spigot in a way that might keep us at 100 plus cases per day for a while, at least until more of us are vaccinated. Lots of Vermonters might be wistful for those 5 or 15 or even 50 cases per day numbers. We could get there again by shutting down more, not opening the spigot. We did it last spring. but it almost seems that we're now willing to accept these case rates of more than 100 per day, in large part because they're happening now among younger people, not the most vulnerable, and we can tolerate that rate while opening up the economy a bit. Is Brian's assessment correct?
To some extent, certainly the part where we've protected the most vulnerable through vaccination, and again, not all of them, but we've protected the most vulnerable. We're seeing the decline in death rates. We're seeing a plateau and then a slowdown in hospitalization rates. So certainly that aspect is true. I think the word tolerate is a tricky one there. We obviously don't want to see 100 cases, 120 cases a day, and we don't want young people to get this disease. It is true that for many it's mild, but for some, as Dr. Levine has mentioned, the long hauler effect is real. You know, I've had friends in their 30s and 40s who tell me that they had COVID several months ago, and it actually took them a few months to get past the fatigue or the brain fog and other symptoms they've described. So yes, there's an opening, but there's still a lot of individual agency with that. So when the governor says things are opening up, we also want people, of course, to continue to do all the other things they need to do and to only go if they're comfortable going. It doesn't mean you should go just because you can go. Think through your situation. Think through the size of your group. Think through the behaviors that they engage in. If this is a higher risk group, or if these are folks who are regularly getting together with people, not wearing masks, then you might want to think twice.
But it's interesting, though, because, you know, the state's own forecast shows that it doesn't look like we're going to get down, or expected to get down, below 50 cases a day on average until late April, according to, you know, current estimates. And of course, the farther out you go, the less certain anybody is of a forecast. But, you know, the state says the likelihood is that we're going to be in the 100 down to 50 range until close to the beginning of May. But then Health Commissioner Dr. Levine was also at pains in the press briefing today to remind young people that long-haul COVID, long COVID, where you have significant health issues and medical symptoms long after your active infection is gone, is a real problem. And so it does seem like a question of, wait a minute, the state thinks we're going to have pretty high case rates for a while, but they're also cautioning that, you know, this could be an issue for people if you get long-haul COVID, and we don't know what's happening with the variants. So what is the message about prevention while also seeing the state open up more, while also being worried about the potential for long-term side effects?
I think the message is moderation and caution and hope. You know, moderating what you're choosing to do. Yes, the restaurants are open. You may choose to go at a time when it's less busy. You may choose to go with just a couple of people who are already in the circle, maybe already with your household. And then I think the caution is you may decide to continue, and you should, because that's we have a continued mandate to be wearing your mask and not to be engaging with a lot of other people, even outside of a business environment. And then finally, hope, you know, that we do see some light on the horizon, and we want to move people as quickly as we can toward vaccination. So there isn't going to be one perfect solution here. We could hold off on opening the spigot, but we're at a time now when you have to weigh a variety of factors. The public health is the most important, but we also recognize that when we open things up, people don't often flood right away either. What you may see is a trickle of more and more people start heading out, but a lot of people still holding back and saying, you know what, I'm not comfortable yet because I haven't been vaccinated. What you might see are more of the vaccinated folks actually going to some of the businesses, and that would be much safer probably than a lot of unvaccinated folks heading into a lot of these businesses. Again, there's some personal agency and personal decision-making involved.
Jim is calling in from Waitsfield. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
Actually, not too bad. I am a transplanted Vermonter. I've been here since 1968, and I'm never prouder than when somebody assumes I'm actually a real Vermonter. So, listen, Vermont's doing a great job. But here's my situation. I had my second shot about a month ago, on the 22nd, and just over this end of this weekend, I've just got sick. I've had bowel problems, I've had fatigue, I've had brain fog, and I'm just wondering about, is there any potential that this could be about some kind of postponed side effect from the Pfizer vaccine, from the second shot?
And Jim, you said you got your second shot about a month ago, right?
Yes.
And just got these symptoms. What do you think, Deputy Commissioner?
It's difficult to evaluate without sitting down, probably with your primary care provider. Generally, we're not seeing impacts from the side effects from the vaccine a month later. Normally, side effects that would show up a month later would not be associated with the vaccine. So it's possible there's something else going on. You may have caught a virus. You may be not feeling well for some other reasons. But I know that after you get a vaccine, we all do it, we are on high alert for how we're feeling. And it's very natural to associate it, especially if it's new, a new feeling or a new symptom to associate it with the vaccine. I would say our immunization program would say it's unlikely a month later that it's associated, but feel free to, you know, talk to your physician. And you can always get a COVID test if you believe that you may have some symptoms of COVID. You know, we know we occasionally have some breakthrough cases as well. So I would recommend checking in with your doctor, but at first glance, it doesn't sound like it would be associated with the vaccine given the length of time.
I think Dr. Levine said today in the press briefing that there are 25 documented cases of people who were fully vaccinated, you know, at least 2 weeks out from their second dose, who have gotten COVID-19. So as we know, this does happen. These vaccines are not 100% effective. But it sounds like, from what Dr. Levine knows, none of those people have been hospitalized, and that the assumption is that for most people who do contract COVID-19 after getting vaccinated, they're more likely to have a mild case. Is that right?
A mild case or even asymptomatic. If they were close contact and got tested well after, you know, they may even be asymptomatic. But yeah, again, these are small numbers compared to the thousands who are fully vaccinated now. But we are tracking it. We recognize it's not 100%.
Dave is calling in from Wilmington. Hi, Dave.
Yes, hello.
Go right ahead.
My question is, they want us to get this vaccine really bad. They want everybody to get vaccinated, yet they make it difficult for you to get it. I don't understand why we can't just walk into a pharmacy and say, I'm ready to get vaccinated like you do with the flu shot. Why you have to go through the computer and make an appointment?
Deputy Commissioner?
Yeah, great question. We talk all the time about how to reduce barriers. Our challenge right now and from the beginning was the limited amount of vaccine. So when we didn't have enough for everybody in Vermont, we needed to prioritize who should get it first. And while everyone's important, we knew that the people who were most at risk for getting very sick or dying were those who were the oldest and those who had certain medical conditions. So that's why we had to restrict it at first. And now that so many people want it, rather than have a free-for-all, we're continuing to go through the ages, because age is still an important factor until we start getting into the younger people. Eventually, this will be like any other vaccine where you can talk to your doctor about getting it. You may even be able to get it through the pharmacy in the same way you might get a flu shot. So we will get there. And hopefully someday this will just be a normal shot that you might get if you haven't been vaccinated. But right now, because we don't have enough for everyone, and because it's an emergency and we're really in this full court push so we can open Vermont back up and get kids in school and protect everyone, we need to do it in this way. But we know it's a little harder, and I wish we could just walk in, and someday we'll get there. But for now, you do have to go through the system. You can also go on our website and check one of the pharmacy systems if you're eligible, and that's another way to do it.
Dave, does the fact that there seems like there's more of a hurdle affect your thinking in when and how you'll get vaccinated?
Absolutely. I'm not getting it until I can walk into a pharmacy and get it without making an appointment.
Why is that? Why does making an appointment feel like something that you're just, that's a bridge too far for you?
Well, I don't have a computer, and I don't have access to one.
Do you know about the hotline, Dave?
Hotline?
Yeah, there's a number you can call. If you don't have a computer, you don't have to use a computer. You don't have to have an email address. I can give you the number if you'd like.
Okay.
It's 855-722-7878.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I will consider that.
Yeah, and thanks for calling, Dave. I appreciate your perspective and your call. Let's go to Hinesburg and talk with Maureen. Hey, Maureen.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a hairstylist and will be fully vaccinated by April 12th. Most of my clientele, probably 90% of them, are older and will also be fully vaccinated, and was wondering if I work by myself and take my clients one at a time, one in, one out. And will we have to wear our masks in the shop when we're together, when there's only just the two of us?
Yeah, when there's just the two of you, and it sounds like in most cases, the two of you will both be vaccinated. Deputy Commissioner, what do you think?
Yeah, if there are fully vaccinated people and no one else around, you can be maskless as you work.
So is that guidance that applies then to places of business if everybody in a place of business or a site of commerce is vaccinated, then nobody needs to be wearing masks? Because this is Maureen's business. You know, it seems like maybe a little bit of a gray area in the sense that it's a small business, it's a one-on-one, but it's still a place of business.
Yeah. And again, this is probably one of those places where you'll need to apply some discretion. So we say that if there are fully vaccinated people in a household visiting another fully vaccinated household, they can go without their masks. If you have a small business where it's only you and your client and you're both fully vaccinated, you know, you would have to decide if that makes sense to you, but it sounds like that would be a case where you have a very controlled environment. You don't have a lot of people coming in and out. And so it sounds like the same type of thing would apply.
Susan in Manchester Center has a question about masks for unvaccinated people. Given the recently updated policy that two unvaccinated individuals or households could gather together at any given time. Susan says, is Governor Scott saying two unvaccinated families can gather, including children's play dates, without masks?
I would suggest, given that we still got the variant, given our cases right now, that if you're coming together and you're unvaccinated, it would be wise to wear masks. I know that there's been a lot of changes in the last few weeks on the details of this. I would err on the side of caution and wear masks. I think the unmasked would be fine for fully vaccinated, but if you've got unvaccinated families together, so more than one household coming together with another unvaccinated family, mask wear would be likely the recommendation still.
Sharon's calling in from Brattleboro. Hi, Sharon. What's your experience?
Well, I know you just mentioned that there's a hotline for if a person doesn't have a computer that they can call in and set up an appointment. And the governor had said earlier that if you wanted to help out somebody who's not computer savvy or elderly, that someone else can call in for them. But we've run into some issues with that where we couldn't sign up our friend. We have three friends, one of which is 90, wanting to get her shot, and another couple who don't have access to a computer, and they insisted that we have an email, and they don't have an email. That's the whole reason for the hotline. So is there another option for these individuals?
Deputy Commissioner?
Yeah, so it sounds like what they needed was the email address to be able to send you information, possibly about your appointment. I understand that if you don't have an email, you can still get an appointment through the line. And I'm wondering if we might just have had an unfortunate call there that didn't quite go the way it's supposed to go. But if you are able to give your information to Jane Lindholm and she can get it to me, maybe I can follow back up there specifically. But normally, if you call this number, especially somebody who doesn't have access to computer or email, they should be able to get an appointment. So I'm wondering if you had somebody on the other end who just might not have had the most up-to-date information. And my apologies for that mishap.
Let's go to an email that we got from Jeff in Waterbury, who says, my wife and I received the Pfizer vaccine at Walgreens in Montpelier. Our second shot is scheduled for the end of the month at Walgreens Morrisville. We were told Walgreens Morrisville only gives Moderna shots. Are we relatively assured that when the time comes, Morrisville will have Pfizer? So far, neither the Department of Health nor Walgreens has been able to answer this question.
So normally, we would only be scheduling you in a place where we know for sure that you have that shot, but it sounds like you're not getting firm answers either from the Department of Health or from Walgreens. So I would encourage you to call again and check in to find out and describe your situation. You can also ask to speak to the next level, so a manager. So if you're not getting the information you need, ask to speak to a supervisor and escalate that up. Again, this sounds like a little bit unusual, and of course I am going to hear these calls on this show because that's where you should be calling. But for the most part, people are getting appointments, of course, back where they normally got their first shot. We did have a little bit of a challenge with Walgreens, and so we've been helping them get on track. But again, if you're uncertain, we wouldn't want you to continue forward. So please call again and advise them to escalate it up if you're still not able to get the answer you need.
What is the situation with Walgreens? We've heard from many people who said they got a first appointment, got their first shot, and then there was no scheduling of the second appointment at the time of their first shot, and in fact have been advised by Walgreens to wait longer than the recommended gap between doses. So what is happening with that program, which is separate from the state program?
Yeah, we have been working with Walgreens to address this. We understood that it was addressed as of a few weeks ago, and that stopped happening. We are occasionally hearing about some small situations, but Walgreens did not have the system in place when they first came on board, and we quickly worked with them. It's our understanding now that it is running more smoothly. And so if people are continuing to have a problem, please call our call center and they should be able to work with you to make sure you get into the right place for your second dose. And again, if there's a problem, feel free to ask to go to the next level. We do have a second level of callers who deal with more complicated issues.
So there have been an uptick in cases associated with the University of Vermont, some in students who live off campus, some in students who live on campus. And there has been some genomic sequencing of samples that were taken from UVM. And it's been reported that 5 samples were tested recently, and 4 of those were found to be the B117 variant. Now, this is the variant that was originally discovered in the UK. And as we heard from Health Commissioner Dr. Mark Levine today, it's expected to be about 50% more transmissible than the standard COVID-19 virus that we had been more familiar with earlier in the pandemic. Does the health department have a sense of how widespread you think this variant now is, either just among the UVM community or in the state at large?
We don't have a sense of how widespread it is. We are checking each week. CDC gets samples, and we are sending our own samples to labs, and we're developing our own capacity to be checking on a more frequent basis. We know it's here, and so it won't surprise us if it's very widespread, particularly among the younger population, because they're the ones who are not vaccinated. So that wouldn't be surprising. We are concerned, obviously, about the higher transmissibility. We are also hearing that it is associated with slightly higher severe illness as well. And so this is, you know, part of the reason we say, please test, please continue to protect through masking, distancing, and please get vaccinated when it's your turn. We are in this gray area where had this variant not come into the mix, we may have seen numbers declining in a more natural way. However, this variant could be contributing to this continued elevation of numbers as we move toward vaccination. The good news is the vaccines all appear to be relatively effective against this variant as well. And so that is the hopeful news here in this case, that it is within the range of what these vaccines were designed to fight.
About a month ago, we were hearing from the health department and others that this variant was likely to become the dominant strain in the U.S. and in Vermont by sometime in March. And we are now reaching the end of March. So is it safe to assume this is the dominant strain, or has that advice or thought changed?
We don't know if it is. Again, because it came late and because we've already got 30% of our population vaccinated, it's possible that it is not dominant. I just don't think we know that yet. However, you know, if it is moving among young people, we know our young people aren't vaccinated. So I think the answer is we just don't know at this time. It certainly seems like among the populations where we're testing and finding it, for example, the UVM population, it may be much more predominant there.
Let's go to Frick in Brattleboro. Hi, Frick. Go right ahead.
Hey there. I have a 15-year-old who's going to be 16 in November. What are the odds of getting him vaccinated?
And you said when is he turning 15?
He's turning 16
in November.
Okay. I haven't heard anything about people under 16 getting vaccinated, but I was hoping to get him shot up at some point.
That's right. Yeah, right now in the United States, no vaccines are authorized for use in individuals under the age of 16. What's the chance that that might happen sometime this summer, Deputy Commissioner?
It's certainly an expedited process. I know that all of the major vaccine manufacturers that are currently both Johnson, Moderna, and Pfizer are all looking at vaccines for younger people. Don't know how quickly that will happen, but I am sure they're highly motivated for that to happen. And I'm glad the caller is already thinking about it, because it will be important for getting kids vaccinated too once it's available. But in the meantime, if it's not available in November, and hopefully it will be, your son or your daughter, I think it was your son, will be able to get vaccinated once they turn 16. You can't register before you turn that age.
We did hear from Health Commissioner Levine in the press briefing today that he seemed pretty confident in saying that he thought all high school students would be able to get the vaccine by fall.
Those who are 16 plus, yes.
He was talking about younger students, because 16 plus are eligible to get the vaccine in April. He was saying younger, this was a question about children, minors who are not currently eligible.
Okay. Oh, so he was saying in the fall they would be eligible. Yeah, that
yeah,
would
he
be
thinks
great.
That by fall all high school students, so presumably, you know, age 14, 13, 14 and up would be getting vaccinated, and then younger children maybe sometime later this year as well.
Yeah, it's possible the next age range they're looking at would be 12 and up once that's approved. And, you know, he may be more dialed in than I am on that. I know that right now they don't have approval yet. And I don't think they have appointments for those approvals yet at this point. But, of course, that could change quickly.
Tracy Dolan is the Deputy Commissioner for the Vermont Department of Health. Tracy, this is my last health update with you. And I just want to thank you for offering us so much of your time to field so many questions over the last many, many months.
Yeah, and I want to thank you for keeping me honest, Jane. You know, part of government is to communicate and to keep ourselves accountable. And you've been tough at times, and I really appreciate that. And I wish you luck in your next adventure as well.